Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor. I'm your host, Chris Taylor, and I am going to do something that I don't usually do, but that I felt was necessary in this case. The last episode I put out yesterday was titled Kyle Rittenhouse, Hero or Monster? And I kind of gave my take about what I had known thus far and what I had observed and what I had believed. And I stand by 90% of that. I still believe the same things. But I should have waited, I think, to put out that episode or to record that episode until after the exclusive interview that Kyle Rittenhouse did with Tucker Carlson. Now, I'm not a Tucker Carlson fan. I don't usually watch Tucker Carlson. I think he's one of the worst progenitors of disinformation and manufactured outrage, and he's part of the problem, I believe, in the media. But I was really interested to hear from Kyle Rittenhouse in his own words. And to Tucker's, not to heap praise on Tucker, but I believe that Tucker allowed Kyle Rittenhouse to speak in his own words, and really wasn't asking too many questions. He wasn't trying to steer the narrative, or he wasn't trying to make something out of nothing. He kind of allowed Kyle to talk and to tell his story in a way that Kyle was not able to in the months and weeks leading up to his trial, because of course, you know, he's on trial for his life. Well, you know, for his life behind bars. And he obviously had good counsel to tell him, do not speak to the media. Do not tell your story. You will take the stand in your own defense. And that really was the first time we ever heard him speak. And so in my take yesterday, I said that I believe that Kyle had the right to do an interview or two. And that I had hoped that he wasn't going to, you know, go on a victory tour and a cash in campaign to try to become this cause and this hero that many on the right and the far right are trying to make him out to be. And you know, I wanted to hear his story from his own words. And I, you know, as somebody who has been in a situation where the general public believes that they know everything about an incident or you in general, me in general, knowing how far off from reality many people's perceptions were in my case, I can only imagine the magnitude of Kyle Rittenhouse's situation. And you hear, like I said, you know, the reason I titled it Hero or Monster is because that's all you would hear. Those on the right would say that he's a hero doing the Lord's, he was doing the Lord's work. He's, you know, should be praised and, you know, everything else. And then those on the left were saying the most horrific things about him, you know, the fact that he, you know, they were saying that he was a white supremacist, that he was part of a militia, that he was there in Kenosha. He had no business being there. He lived in Illinois. He crossed state lines with an AR-15 that he illegally procured, and he was underage and shouldn't have had the rifle. And not only that, but he traveled there with the specific purpose to do battle against Black Lives Matter members and Antifa and all of that other nonsense. Excuse me. I'm not trying to say that Black Lives Matter members are nonsense. I'm saying that, you know, the narrative of the of the situation was nonsense, that he was there expressly to kill Black people or those that were supporting Black Lives Matter, those in Kenosha that were protesting and rioting and looting and everything else. We saw in the trial how far off that narrative really was. And I think that in Tucker's interview, Kyle Rittenhouse did himself a very big service. And what I mean by that is he came off as very genuine and honest and believable. You have to remember that he was 17 years old when this incident happened. He's now 18 years old. He is a kid. But some of the perspective and insights that he gave in this interview, now, I've heard those people say, oh, you know, he's had a year or more to be coached by the best media, you know, public relations people. And he, of course, he's going to have this perfect story and all this stuff. It doesn't really work like that, guys. You can't, as an 18-year-old, be taught how to lie that good. I'm sorry. It's just not possible. Now, was he given some pointers and was he coached how to present himself and how to talk about his case? Absolutely. That's what a multi-million dollar defense fund would do for him on the stand. And the Tucker interview was just 2 days removed from that. You know, he definitely had some training in how to, you know, present himself and craft his narrative. But I got to tell you, as a public relations specialist, and as somebody who is very well trained and versed in communication techniques and in the psychological warfare side of that, detecting deception, and I have to tell you, I did not detect one bit of deception in him. I did not detect one bit of, and I'm not saying that it's a foolproof situation. You know, he could definitely be a sociopath, and he could be one of those people that would be able to beat a lie detect a polygraph because he's just so cunning and diabolical. That yes, I'm not saying that that's out of the realm of possibility, but I'm saying that as a 17, 18 year old kid, that's just not likely. And we learned some things in this interview that we also learned in the trial that gave some more context to. And I gotta say, you know, the reason I'm doing this second take, I'm calling it Kyle Rittenhouse episode 2.0 or episode 52.1, because it was episode 52 of my podcast. I should have waited until I watched the interview with him and Tucker before I started talking about the case. I learned some things, right? I learned that he actually had a reason to be in Kenosha. He lived there with his father. His primary residence was with his mother across the border with Illinois, in Antioch, Illinois, and that's where he lived. But he was working as a lifeguard in Kenosha, and his father lived there. And he had friends, obviously, that lived there because he worked there and he lived with his father there, part-time at least. And so I will admit that, you know, I had said that he really didn't have any business to be there. He shouldn't have been there. I still stand by the fact that I don't think he should have been in the riots with an AR-15. I do happen to understand now that his motives were more, I won't say pure because I always believe that, but I think that they were more justified, maybe, than I had previously thought. Okay. I will admit that, that he really felt a sense of duty to do something. And as a 17-year-old, you know, my gosh, you have to, respect that, right? He wasn't there to kill people. He wasn't there to be an anti-protester to the BLM movement. He wasn't there to stoke anger. He just, at least that's not what I believe. I believe that he was there, that he went to try to help his community. I truly believe that now. I know that is true. But I still have to stand by the fact that I don't think he should have been there with an AR-15 with that crowd. I also learned a little bit about the people that he killed. The one guy that the first guy that he shot wasn't part of the protests. Like, he wasn't part of the Black Lives Matter movement. This guy apparently was a very disturbed individual. He had been released from a mental institution within 24 hours prior to that. He was there, who knows why, but you kind of get the sense that he was there to kind of try to commit like some sort of suicide by cop situation. He was running around agitating people, using the N-word, stoking people to kill him. Like, he was just not right in his head. But there were protesters there that were like distancing themselves from this guy because he was like going about, you know, screaming the N-word and all this stuff. And these people are here to protest, inequality and racial inequality and police brutality and all this stuff. And this guy obviously doesn't fit in that crowd. And he definitely wasn't on the side that Kyle Rittenhouse was with, the people that were there to support this business from being destroyed. And I do happen to believe that business owners have the right to protect their businesses, especially when the police and the government, who that's one of the governments at any levels, number one duty is to protect life and property and everything else. And there was some major failures there from the local level all the way up to the federal response to this situation. I mean, after the George Floyd situation, after Ferguson, Missouri, after all these things, you would think that by then that, you know, they would be braced for this kind of outrage and this kind of unrest. And there was no call for the National Guard to be there. There was no, you know, obviously this small town or smaller town in Wisconsin, the police were spread thin. They weren't able to go and protect every business. So the car lot that was burned the night before, that was what Kyle Rittenhouse was going the next day in response to say, hey, to this local car dealership, you know, do you need some help protecting your other two car lots? And the business owner said, yes, we do. This is our livelihood. And yes, I understand that most businesses would have a proper level of insurance that would cover them for this kind of stuff. But we all know how insurance payouts go. You're never going to get exactly what your inventory is worth. It's always going to be a backlog of red tape and bureaucracy that's going to slow it down. I mean, many small businesses are always on the brink of, you know, having to lay off people if they have a bad month. I mean, people have this idea that these business owners of these small businesses, like say a decent small size car dealership, the owners just are flush with cash and they have millions and millions of dollars in net worth and they can just afford to you know, lose money and everything would be okay. But that's just not reality. Many small to mid-sized businesses, you know, don't have those, you know, reserves that would be needed to lose a few months worth of inventory to keep their business going, to keep their employees employed and everything else. And so, I mean, they were desperate. And Kyle Rittenhouse, I really believe was, you know, someone that wanted to help his community. And it's just a horrible situation all around. And that's why I wish that more people would wait before they condemn anybody, because there's always more to the story. There's always parts that we don't know. There's always different things. And so anyway, the first guy that he shot was attacking him and was like provoking him, and he was in self-defense. And then the other guy did point a gun at him. And he even testified to that fact on the stand for the prosecution, which ended up helping the defense that proved that self-defense. And then after he had shot the one guy and then wounded the other guy, you know, then the mob really thought that he was an active shooter. And they were going to attack him, and then you know, things just escalated from there and everything else. Kyle went to try to turn himself in to the police there on the scene, and they, in all the chaos, maybe didn't understand what he was saying. They pepper sprayed him and they told him to go home, get lost. And that's unfortunate. And then Kyle's mom, which I talked a little bit about in my last episode, that, you know, what kind of mom would drive their son to a protest with an AR-15 and just say, here you go, son, you know, have a good time. You know, she, after the initial situation happened, and he said, Mom, I have to turn myself into the police. I've killed people. I know that it's in self-defense, and I know that there was video, but I still have to do the right thing. And her response to that was, we should hide you out. I mean, get real. I mean, that just proves again how misguided she was in this whole thing. But he did the right thing. He went and turned himself in. And then, of course, the Kenosha County prosecutors ran wild and charged him without conducting a proper investigation. And I've already said what I feel about that. The prosecutorial misconduct and everything else was egregious. But listen, I thought and still feel that I was very fair on Kyle from the very beginning. But I felt like I needed to do a second part to this episode to kind of share my thoughts on how he came through, how I perceived him in his interview. Anyway, on Fox, so last night on Fox News Channel, Tucker Carlson Tonight, an average of nearly 5 million viewers watched the exclusive first interview, and that dominated cable news, outdrawing CNN and MSNBC combined. It outdrew CNN's ratings by 549%. Tucker also crushed competitors among the advertiser coveted demographic of adults age 25 to 54, averaging a staggering 891,000 demo viewers compared to 180,000 for CNN and only 150,000 for MSNBC. So like I said, I knew that there's going to be a lot of people, even people who don't necessarily ever really watch Fox News or Tucker Carlson, were going to tune in for that interview, because like I said, we'd never really heard Kyle talk and tell his trial. And that was just a few minutes on the stand. You know, a lot of people wanted to hear what he had to say. So he talked a little bit about the night that led to his arrest. as well as the eventual acquittal by the jury and the angry reaction of the mainstream media. And he even addressed President Biden. And this is where I thought that he was very composed. You know, he could have went out and attacked President Biden, because President Biden, you know, I think did what a lot of us did, was kind of judge before we knew all the facts. And he had heard things that Kyle was part of a militia and that Kyle was part of a white supremacist group. And we learned from Kyle that actually originated by his original defense lawyers. And I was surprised to hear it was none other than Lynn Wood, one of the major grifters of the whole Donald Trump stolen election debacle. He's one of the guys that went around with saying that he represented the president personally, and went around with Rudy Giuliani and why am I blanking on this lady's name? I've done an episode about her, the real crazy one that's being sued for billions of dollars now by the company that she claimed had rigged the election. What is her name? That's going to really bug me. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about. The people that were standing up there with Rudy Giuliani claiming that had represented President Trump. Anyway, this Lynn Wood guy had raised over $1 million to get Kyle bailed out. But he, instead of using that right away, told Kyle that you'll be safer in jail. And he ended up spending 8 and almost 90 days in jail. And I didn't know that. And I had said yesterday that I thought he had only spent a couple days in jail. Because the original people that jumped up to represent Kyle obviously were some major bad people. It was just interesting to learn that it was Lynn Wood, the same guy who's been a featured speaker at many of the Trump rallies since the election in Georgia and Arizona, and all these people that go around, you know, traveling around with Rudy Giuliani and doing all of these rallies and these fake hearings in front of state legislatures and all this stuff. This is the guy that originally jumped forth and said, I will represent you, Kyle. And he ended up raising a few million dollars that never found its way to the bail bondsman. And so luckily Kyle was able to fire that crazy man and get a real all-star defense team. But this is another thing that I learned that was surprising in the interview, that Kyle talked about how he was not a racist person, that he does support the Black Lives Matter movement, actually, and he supports peacefully demonstrating, and he believes that there needs to be a change. He believes that there's a lot of prosecutorial misconduct, not just in his case, but in many cases, which I agree with. Rittenhouse also told Carlson that he was staying at the home of a friend during the Kenosha riots and was mystified and troubled by the lack of resources provided to the police in trying to quell the violence after the shooting of Jacob Blake. And I agree with that. There was a failure from the local level all the way up to the state level, the governor and the federal government's response. The National Guard should have been called out immediately to protect those businesses, to keep the peace, to let people peacefully protest, but then to be there when it got out of hand and people took advantage of the peaceful protests. We all know, anybody who really understands what happens during these Black Lives Matter protests, the Black Lives Matter always get the raw end of the deal in the fact that they're doing a protest, and then these criminal-minded people will bandwagon onto that, and they're the ones that come out at night and burn and loot and steal and destroy, and they end up looking like they are part of BLM, and that's not always the case, and people need to understand that. And so those people need to be arrested when they're there burning car lots and when they're there looting and stealing. And that's just a fact. So in the question that you know, Tucker, this is probably the one time that I felt Tucker was trying to prod Kyle into a political moment, if you will. He asked, you know, would you condemn Biden for prejudging him as a white supremacist? Kyle said, Mr. President, if I could say one thing to you, I would urge you to go back and watch the trial and understand the facts before you make a statement. And it was very composed and it was very respectful of the office. He called him Mr. President. As an 18-year-old that's been through this situation, it was very surprising to me to hear him be so respectful and be so composed and be so articulate in his responses and in his interview. I couldn't help but watching that interview thinking, man, how misjudged have people been on Kyle Rittenhouse, myself included. And I, even knowing this, knowing that, you know, there's always more to a story, knowing that, you know, you can only believe less than half of what you hear and all this other stuff. I had got the sense, even knowing that, look, I'm going to be as even killed as possible on this. I feel like I even, you know, had prejudged a little bit on Kyle, thinking that, you know, he was going to go out and cash in on this and do a victory tour and go and sidle up to Matt Gaetz and all these people that are clamoring for his attention so that they can raise money and use him. You know, he was very clear. Now I will say that actions speak louder than words. So we'll wait to see what happens with him in the next few weeks and months. But he was, you know, when asked what he was going to do, you know, immediately in the next couple of months and weeks and years of his life, he said, I just want to go and be a normal 18-year-old and go to college and live a quiet life and not be, he specifically said this, not be made a cause for any side. And you know, I have to respect that because I thought the opposite. And we'll see, obviously, what he ends up doing. But like I said, he came off very believable. And I think that he just wants to go and get on with his life. You know, he wishes that he wasn't there that night, but he stands by the fact that he was in self-defense. And I really believe that, too. Man, this is just a real horrible situation for everybody involved. It's even more horrible that the left-leaning news made him out to be a monster, and the right-leaning people that made him out are trying to make him out to be some cause for their culture war and their manufactured outrage and to make him some symbol for this lunacy that they're engaged in. And from what he says, he doesn't want to be a part of that. And I respect that. And I hope that he can go and get the help that he needs emotionally and mentally, and that he can go to college and that he can live somewhat of a normal life, that he's entitled to that. He was brought before a jury of his peers and he was acquitted. And whatever you believe that to be, whether you believe he was that was a wrong verdict or not, or whatever, you have to respect that and you have to let him get on with his life. And I would hope that everybody would take a second to listen to him in his own words. Even though it is Tucker Carlson, I understand Tucker's can be very hard to watch sometimes, but I believe that he did a very fair interview in this case and he let Kyle just talk. He wasn't really trying to steer the conversation. He wasn't trying to interject and try to make him go one way or the other. He was just letting him, you know, tell his story and tell people who he was, which he had the right to do. So anyway, thanks for listening to this second take of the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. You're listening to the Come This Far podcast with Chris Taylor.